Coming up on Voice of Youth, where every week we take a different term of teen slang,
bread,
gangster,
trippin',
gaffle,
peace,
and define it as only youth can. This week, hood, just an abbreviation for neighborhood or something else entirely? This question is at the heart of tonight's audio dictionary entry. In this next hour, kids describe the drama of their hoods, drama with some pretty drastic outcomes.
Now my old buddy Bob was stuck with a mechanical leg.
And our colleagues 2,000 miles away in Chicago's hoods.
They say, if you can see the blue light, then they can see you.
Let us walk a mile, more or less, in their shoes. And then Mr. Kevin Epps, the maker of Straight Outta Hunters Point, the pioneer of the hood documentary.
That's what they say. They say I'm a pioneer.
And of course, today's two hosts give you an earful of sagas and situations, questions and comments, and they even throw in a few songs all about the word hood. Hosts, 3, 2, 1, take it away.
I was raised on the east side of Petaluma. If I was raised on the west side, I'd be so stupid. There are certain west side things about their ideas. And plus, the Phoenix, the music spot on that side of town, plays mostly rock, mostly punk rock and that stuff. On the east side, we're more like rap, I guess. It's more Mexicans and more diverse, I think. People who have just moved to Petaluma. A lot of people trying to get away from where they were and move to the burbs. Where I first lived, my first hood, from age 1 to like 14, there were a lot of trees and we would climb them. There were hella kids and tons of parks near my house. The news of the neighborhood was that one time some sort of convict was on the run. He was running down the street and he jumped over the fence into a neighbor's lawn and then there was a standoff. Well, I wasn't awake, but my mom told me about it. Besides that, it was a hella good neighborhood. There was nothing bad ever going on in that neighborhood. Not like my dad's, later, after my parents got divorced. Well, we thought it would be a good area. Things didn't start happening right away, and then suddenly, there was so much stuff happening. It seems like my friend Dominic Street, Cronilla, and Albert, my street, is the most hood. We got robbed twice, our house, and my brother's car. Someone got their house painted with gang graffiti tags. There's a lot of tags in that hood. All the Sereno gang. But now there's some Norteño. There's hella kids trying to be Norteño now. It's getting crazy. And then there was the meth lab. There was a whorehouse slash meth lab on my street. It was in the paper. Or then, the Petaluma Prowler. He'd go into some houses and tickle girls' feet. He was also known as the Tickler. But I liked the name the Petaluma Prowler better. It seemed like something out of a comic book. He tickled some girl's feet a few blocks away from Dominic's house. And Brett Callen used to chill in that hood. Brett, this kid who got killed in a car accident. Car accidents are real in Petaluma. Hella kids die in Petaluma from car accidents. I can think of 7 just off top. One kid I know even killed someone when he was driving. He was hella popular, I remember. And then, these people on my street killed themselves. There was a murder-suicide like 3 houses down. That's pretty hood for Petaluma. Pretty hood for the burbs. But this place is just weird. Everything that happens, it's supposed to be like this perfect place, but it's not. Like there's this house on my street that has a perfect garden, and there's always mentally disabled people working in the yard, raking leaves, chopping bushes, and carrying stuff. But really slow. They always seem really bored. I feel like they want to do other stuff, like go swimming or something. I seriously feel that way. I think I know the kid who lives there. I think his parents pay those guys. So I guess they're not slaves. But still, it seems really like they are. There's one that looks hella trippy and he mugs hella hard. I'm telling you, they're slaves. Call my friend Dominic, he'll let you know. There's a slave house in my hood. At least, a hood I grew up in. I'm host Greg Shimada. Today, on our show, the hoods we grew up in. The hoods of the headlines, and how does it feel when it's the same place?
I was raised, well, everywhere. My earliest memories always seem to take me to an apartment my mom shared with her then and only husband, this guy named Steve. I remember that apartment quite well, at least the corners, because me and my brothers were always being sent to them. That was the only hood I knew at the time, that townhouse. After my mom separated from Steve, I remember hopping on a Greyhound bus with her and my 2 brothers and going to Texas. I don't remember how long we rode those buses, but it was long days and long nights. The one thing I remember the most was the big black TVs on the seats at the stations and the big arcade games that me and my brothers had to make sure to hit up at every stop. My mom would even play sometimes too if they had Pac-Man. That was and still is her favorite video game. When we got to Texas, we lived in a big, double-wide trailer on my great-grandmother's property, right next to her own trailer. It was in a little country town named Trinity, where the roads are dirt and narrow, and there's all types of animals and other life. We lived on grassy land with a stream as our backyard. What a great hood, huh? Then, I remember starting first grade back in Santa Rosa, California. There was 6th Street, right near downtown, and these two-story apartments. A pretty nice neighborhood, real quiet. Then, I moved to a part of town called The Third. This neighborhood had a lot of Mexicans living there, and also a lot of gangsters. After moving around a lot more through time, in and out of shelters and different family members' houses, my mom, my brothers, and I found ourselves in a 3-bedroom townhouse in Union City, California. I remember this hood was predominantly Filipino. That was a trip. This place was nice. There was only people smoking weed by the garages and fist fights once in a while. I met some of my best friends to this day there, and I will be forever grateful to this hood for giving me this part of my life. Then, our housing ran out. We bounced around the Bay Area for a while. Then, my mom moved us to Southern California, to Bakersfield, and that's where I lived in the most hoods I ever lived in. First of all, it was full of black people, and I finally felt like I made it to the promised land. You know, like I wasn't going to be the minority anymore. I could actually fit in. I remember hearing about something bad happening every day or night. Shootings, stabbings, murders, people getting robbed. When we first moved there, we lived in the south side of town. When my mom was able to get us a place of our own, we moved to the east side of town. I remember having to always lie or try to avoid questions as much as possible from the people in this hood, because the South and the East were rivals. I always felt torn between sides in those two hoods. It was like I could never really be myself in Bakersfield. I even remember one time, one of my friends from the South side came over and killed one of my East side friends. I didn't know what to do or how to feel because I couldn't let anyone from the East side know that I knew the guy from the South side, or they might try to turn on me, or maybe even think I had something to do with the murder. I tried to hide my sadness of my East side friend's death to my South side family and friends, because I knew they would think I was tripping and they could probably care less. I'm so grateful to have gotten out of those hoods. And now I'm back in Santa Rosa, a safer place maybe, but still a place that makes me feel stuck. I'm host LaQuaya Simmons. Today on our show, the hoods we've escaped, the ones we keep coming back to, and how does it feel when you can't stay, but you just can't go? First, an audio collage.
And now it's time for Dial-A-Teen. Hit it, fellas.
I'm ready.
Okay. All right.
Hello?
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 Hello? Can you hear me? What is your name?
Sean.
My name's Mandy.
I'm Jane.
Hi, my name's Nat.
Where are you right now? The sights, sounds, and smells.
Oh, actually, right now I just walked down my stairs, and I am seeing my parking lot.
I'm in the car. We're just eating Jawbreakers, listening to Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Well, I'm at home, and I see my computer, and I smell nothing, and I'm hearing you talk to me right now.
I'm in my room.
What's your definition of the term hood?
Like some ghetto street where a bunch of gangsta kids, you know, act gangsta.
The hood's just like a bad place where people hang out at.
Well, I guess the first thing would be the hood of a sweatshirt. And then the other would be a slang term for a neighborhood.
A hood is where you're from, where you represent pretty much. I mean, where you come from, pretty much your home, you know, your hometown.
Use the term hood in a sentence.
My hood is crazy.
I'm posting up at the hood.
My sweatshirt has a hood.
Hey, man, y'all want to kick in the hood?
What's the difference between the term neighborhood and hood?
Hood's all ghetto, and neighborhood's, like, not ghetto.
Hood is, like, more gangsterish, and neighborhood's, like, a friendly area.
I don't think there's any difference.
Yeah, neighborhood is where you live. I mean, your family, you know, everybody, all your friends, I guess. I mean, maybe after you move out of your hood. I don't know.
Are you in the hood right now? Why or why not?
I'm not, because my house is not very hood-like.
I'm in the middle of nowhere on the road going to my friend's cousin's house because it's her birthday.
Yes, I am in the hood because I'm in a neighborhood that I live in.
No, my house. This is a nice neighborhood, that's why.
Okay, well, hey, I gotta go.
Okay, I love you.
I love you too.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
This segment made possible by court-ordered probation.
This is your host, LaQuaya Simmons, and your fellow host, Greg Shimada.
Hello, hello.
Amanda Wells is off this week. We're going to be your guides on this investigation into the meaning of the term hood. We just got a pretty typical teen take on hood.
We heard some of the classic definitions of hood. A violent, poor place.
It's like part of the definition of the word hood is that it's the opposite of neighborhood, with the assumption that everyone in the hood would rather be in neighborhoods. But you're going to hear in the show how that's not the case.
And there's even a spookier layer to the definition of hood. Like, I was thinking of how I use hood. I was thinking how I might use it when I want to tell someone where we're going. Like, this is the hood. Like, get ready. In this case, you're kind of alerting people to the fact that you're going to a place with a certain secret world to it. Like, you need to give people a heads up that there's stuff going on that they might not see if they're not from there. Something invisible to outsiders. What is this invisible quality all about? You'll just have to stay tuned to our show.
Our first step into the hood is a collection of stories written anonymously by our staff writers. Our staff was asked, what was a happy day and a sad day in your hood? We picked the best of these essays to play for you. The essays are usually read by someone who did not write the essay to keep the writers anonymous. But this time, our third story is both written and read by Sean Allen, all of 13 years old.
Roll that tape.
A happy day in my hood was the day all the neighborhood kids got together to have a baseball tournament. We played from morning until night. When I was younger, I ate, slept, and drank baseball. And the best part of my happy day was when my team won the final game of the tournament. It felt really good, not just like a pickup game with the neighborhood kids. It felt like a championship game. There was nothing better than hanging out with a bunch of crazy kids my age doing what we love to do. It was one of the funnest days in my life. A sad day in my hood was when a kid down the street, age 17, died in a car crash. I was 12 at the time, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I woke up and my stepmom came into my room to tell me Chris died. I was like, what? And then she said, not little Chris, who was my best friend, Chris Carr. I felt terrible because I had a sense of relief in a way because it wasn't my best friend. Later on, when I went down the street and everyone was talking about Chris, it started to get to me. These parents lost their son forever. I couldn't stop thinking about that. It felt unreal. Everyone knew of Chris. He had a nice car and was always with a beautiful girl. I wonder how it could happen to him. All the neighborhood kids looked up to Chris. Chris was an incredible person, and the day he died was a crazy, hectic, and sad day in my hood.
A happy day in my hood. Well, in my hood, there really wasn't any happy days. There was always troubled days, like either fights or stabbings and drive-bys. Never any silence. So I guess it's safe to say that happy days in my hood when I used to hang out, or even now, aren't possible. But who knows, maybe when the hard times pass by, there could be some happy days. A sad day in my hood was that one day when my close friend passed away. One day, I was hanging out with my girlfriend in the hood, and we were just chilling. So that night, my girlfriend was gonna go to a birthday party with my close friend, but she came to see me before she left. So she came to my house with two other friends who were going to go with them also. So I remember that I was with my girlfriend and her two friends across the street close nearby. We were just chilling, and then we saw a suspicious guy walk down right by us. It looked like he was carrying a huge stick, so we really didn't think anything about it. But then, a couple minutes later, we heard a huge pop. We heard some screams, and then right after that, a friend of ours came in her car burning tire to announce that someone had just shot our close friend. My girlfriend and her friends who were with us ran like there was no tomorrow. I ran right after that to my house to get my sister to tell her what had just happened. She ran downstairs, me screaming and crying. I told my uncle, who was freeloading off my family, to call the police because my friend had just gotten shot. He laughed right in my face. I will never forget that day as long as I live. That is one of the saddest and most traumatizing days that I've ever experienced in my entire life.
A happy day in my hood. It was a hot day last summer at the pool in my apartment complex, the Commons. That summer, we would always be hanging out at the Commons, except for sometimes when we went to Cusar. There was me, my friend Alex, two Mexican kids named Jose and Angel, but they were more Alex's friends than mine. A black kid named Leon, and a skinny small kid with big ears named River. And there was a 40-something-year-old guy named Bob, who lived at the apartment complex. And in the summer, normally Bob would show up at the pool around 12 o'clock. Me and my friends would be hanging out at the Commons. We would see that Bob was out at the pool, and we would say, "There's Bob, let's go to the pool," because we couldn't go swimming without an adult. A long time ago, Bob got hit by a car when he was on a motorcycle, so the doctors had to cut off his leg. Now, my old buddy Bob was stuck with a mechanical leg. Bob would detach his leg, put it on a chair, and go in the water to swim laps. And meanwhile, Bob's wife, who was pretty big, would just be laying out in a two-piece pink bathing suit, covered in some sort of tanning oil. It was disgusting. She looked fake, kind of. The really cool thing about Bob is that he always brought toys. One time, Bob brought a water toy that when you turned it on, the legs turned around really fast, so it zoomed through the water. He had a squid one, a human one, and a shark one. We would race them, we would chase them, we would also battle. Anything you could imagine with them, pretty much. Another time, Bob came down to the pool, he brought some waterproof walkie-talkies. Me and my old friend Alex would say stuff to each other through the walkie-talkies underwater. "You're stupid," I would say. "Blah," was what it would sound like to Alex. Alex was really funny, and also kind of funny looking. He was 12 years old and he weighed 194 pounds. While we were playing, there was a big kid named Dave who would just stand in the corner of the shallow end. He would just stare around and hit the water like da da splash splash. He was always doing that. And one day, the really happy day in my hood, Bob brought down a very big floating whale. A whale bigger than me, longer than me, and fat. When we saw it, we were like, "Oh, that's awesome." The water was so cold that we would always say, "Whoever gets in first is the best, and the person who gets in last is retarded." And that day, I wanted to get in first, so I could get on the whale. I ran and jumped on it as if I was going to body slam on the whale. I held on with the handles, but it was hard to get myself up. And once I was up, everyone was trying to push me off, and then they'd get on, and then someone would push them off, and on, trying to stand on it, doing a front flip, and landing on it, trying to jump over it, all different stuff. Finally, someone was like, "Oh, I have to go," and one by one, we went home to dinner, and then Bob took his whale home. And he brought it down every day for a while until a mean guy named Ted complained to the new manager, and then that was it for the whale. Soon the pool closed, and the only times we would see Bob was on his bike. Once in a while, we'd say, "Hey, Bob," and he'd just say, "Hey, dudes." And then one day, I realized I never saw him anymore, which brings me to a sad day in my hood. One day, I was in the creek on the trail that goes along it. It's right by the Commons. If you hop the fence, you're there. It was me and my sister and her friends just walking home from KFC. There was a man slouching down with a 40 in his hand with a bike next to him. I looked at him and I saw that it was Bob. He had dirty pants and messed up black shoes with a little bit of brown on them, a 5 o'clock shadow, and he smelled like beer and urine. His expression was confused, excited, happy, and drunk. "Hey, Bob," I said. "What's up, Sean?" he said. "Where are you living, man?" "Right here, man." "That sucks," I said. "I know it." "What happened to your wife?" I asked. "She left me because I lost my job." "Ooh, burn. That sucks," I said. "I know it. I know it." It was comfortable and awkward at the same time. It was good to see him, but not in that kind of way. See you later, dude, I said. And that night, lying in bed when I was about to go to sleep, I was thinking about how Bob's life went from having a wife and an apartment and being such a fun and nice guy to saving a few cents for a beer. I was still thinking about it for like a week straight. After that, every now and again, I see him in the creek. I saw his wife the other day riding a bike. She stopped and gave me a hug, and I was like, ugh, you're gross. Well, I didn't say that. I just hugged her. And she asked, have you seen Bob? And I was like, yeah, he's in the creek. I know, she said, with a sad face. I hope you find him. Bye, I said, and she rode off into the creek. And that was a happy day and a sad day in my head.
You're listening to KRCB's Voice of Youth, The Hood Show.
This is host LaQuaya Simmons, here with fellow host Greg Shimada, and this is indeed Voice of Youth, giving you a full hour-long definition of the term hood.
What you just heard was a sampling of essays by our own Voice of Youth staff. We heard the word hood used to describe a place that seems happy. Most people probably would say using hood to say that is not right.
They might say that hood is the second story, where there's no happy days, and there's all this drama. But describing it as a place of poor people, and where violence is just taking a surface slice off the meaning. What's under that surface?
We had to go into the Voice of Youth archives to get some clues about that. In the archives, we found a little clip for you from a speech that scholar Cornel West gave at Sonoma State University a while back. Some wisdom is about to be dropped, so listen close.
Somebody like myself grew up in a neighborhood. A lot of young folk grew up in the hood. Qualitative difference. Qualitative difference. You see, both of them might be all brown or all black, but a neighborhood is a place where you got these supports in place. You got strong families. Right? The men and women got jobs. A lot of them stay together. You got little league. So everybody on Saturday morning, they get up, they playing baseball. They not watching BET and so forth and so on. They doing something that's character shaping and virtue inducing. You know what I mean? A hood is what? Social Darwinian space. Survival of the slickest. It's true. Bullets flowing. Families weak. Fathers drifting. Mamas overworked and underpaid. Can't even trust your friends. What is 52% of young black men between 18 and 26 say, I don't have one best friend I can rely on. Now, what is it like to be in the world if your father's drifting, your mother's overworked, the teachers don't have confidence in your ability, and your best friend's looking at your girl all the time? Hey, you living on the edge.
Woo, Cornel West, what a legend. I think what he had to say opened up the definition of hood a lot.
And we're about to get another legend on the line to go further down the path that Professor West opened up for us. Kevin Epps, the director of Straight Outta Hunters Point. Hunters Point is a neighborhood in the extreme southeastern part of San Francisco. It fits the bad place definition of hood for sure.
But it's also a place where people are really proud to be from. Like if you're a rapper and you can say you're from Hunters Point, people have instant respect for you.
So Kevin Epps is a mostly self-taught independent filmmaker who created this film about the experiences and people of his hood, Hunters Point.
We've got Kevin on the line to tell us about his movie, his hood, and what it all means. Welcome to the show.
How y'all doing? Greg, LaQuaya, what's up?
So can I ask you to introduce yourself and where you are exactly right now? What do you see around you, the sights and the sounds?
My name is Kevin Epps. I'm in the city right now, a.k.a., you know, San Francisco. I'm right here on 3rd Street, actually, in Hunters Point, over that way.
And do you want to tell us about a day in your life? Like, what's a typical day? What's a good day and maybe a bad day?
Man, a good day. The good day is being able to see my peoples, man. Right now, we're dealing with a lot of issues in Bayview Hunters Point, man. There's been a series of homicides over here. 2 days ago, a double homicide with some youngsters that I kind of know their family. So A good day is to kind of go through a day without getting, like, no news about something, you know. Of course, I got a production company where we produce independent films. Straight Outta Hunters Point was the first film. Also, executive produced another film that's straight out of the hood called The Bay Got Game.
Yeah, I got that.
My young partners put out a film called Hood to Hood.
Mm-hmm. Got that.
So that, you know, that's a typical day, man, just being in the hood and trying to use what we do on an everyday basis to, like, allow for our people to tell their stories.
I was just going to say, you were just naming a few other films. Would you say that you're more like a pioneer for those type of films that came along? Or
That's what they say, you know. They say I'm a pioneer, you know.
At the time
that I was setting out to do what I did, it never dawned on me that I was the first one to be making a film about the hood that would be sort of the blueprints or sort of setting in motion this new genre of films.
So, like, what did you set out to do by making the movie Straight Outta Hunters Point?
The community need a voice. And that was my initial thought. Like, I want to do a film from my hood, by somebody from my hood, from somebody that can go and talk to the people from this hood. Not the traditional media where the news come in and do a little quick, you know, they take the sound bites and chop them up.
Yeah.
So what it was me covering our everyday existence in Hunters Point and being able to allow people to tell their stories and feel comfortable telling their stories by me being part of that tribe. So that was my initial intention. Like, man, I got to tell a story about this hood, man. What is it? Where did it come from? Why is it so violent? And also wanted to kind of define my role. What was I doing? I was hustling still, selling drugs. I wanted to, like, you know, put that out there and create a conversation around that. That was my initial inspiration behind making this film. As it evolved and certain things sort of happened where the mainstream press picked up on it and film festivals, and by me, you know, being in that position and this film starting to get that type of recognition, I said, well, you know what? I got to use this to inspire other people to tell their stories. So that's where I kind of, you know, embarked on this campaign to, like, uplift other hoods and other people that had aspirations to make films, you know. And so many people from here I've been to hoods from here to South Central to Southside Chicago to Brooklyn, and it was always talking to people of color, people that look like me, like, man, what did you do? How did you do this? What can we do? I want to tell a story about my hood. I want to tell a story about my community. And, you know, us having the same skin tone and coming from the same situation, it gave them hope, you know, that they can go out and tell their stories. And so that became my mission.
Definitely.
What kind of criticism have you got for your past work, I guess, in Straight Outta Hunters Point? Like,
I received a lot of criticism when I made Straight Outta Hunters Point, man, and got into, like, fights and got into, you know, when cats pull guns on you. But I think as time evolved, you know, people started to respect what I was doing and started to respect my work.
Something that I just want to ask you about is the guy, one of the guys that was portrayed in there, Bumper, is that his name?
Yeah, Bumper Joe.
Yeah, and was that a friend of yours?
It was my little brother. Like, you know, that was my friend, my little brother, my comrade.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. And he was a soldier, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he wasn't around when the film got, you know, when we finally finished. He was there through the whole journey, and he helped me get through a lot of certain communities that was resistant to what he was doing, because he was very highly respected in the streets. And so Bump really, you know, helped make that possible.
It seemed like he was a genuinely, like, a good guy, you know what I'm saying? And that it wasn't like the neighborhood could, like, hold him down, so to speak. And I got the feeling that he kind of was like a leader, you know, and it's just unfortunate that things like that happened, you know what I mean? And it was just a trip to see how it just transitioned to his funeral. And now, man, that was so scary. Even to this day, when I watch that part, like, I still think about it all the way to the next day, you know what I'm saying?
I tell you, even to this day, 3-4 years later, Bumper Joe in Hunters Point, especially from West Point, is missed. because he was like this leader of this generation right now.
So let me ask you, what would you say is the difference between a hood and a neighborhood?
Well, it's actually short for neighborhood, but just something about hood, you know, people know that it's coming from a place where a lot of the underserved, particularly people of color, come from. You know, when I'm like, man, what hood you from? A brother like, man, I'm from the hood. You know, they coming from a place where it's just a lot of poverty and a lot of other issues that exist, you know, mostly people of color, like I said.
I did an interview, and I had actually went to go listen to a lecture with Cornel West, and he talked about a hood being a place where people gotta basically fend for themselves, you know, survival of the slickest, you know what I mean? You don't really have no family, versus the neighborhood where you, you know, everybody has like a structure, you know what I'm saying?
I don't think that's necessarily so. Mm-hmm. I think that it does have a structure, and there is a sense of family. You know, I come from the hood. I didn't particularly grow up, you know, with my mama, because of the issues with crack, you know what I'm saying, and being evicted. But even after we got evicted from our housing project, I still was in that hood, and I congregated with a lot of other homies that was in similar situations. So that became our family. You know, my auntie, I lived with her, you know, so she took on the role of my mother or my guardian in a sense. And her dude, her boyfriend at certain times took on a role as my father or as a father figure or big brother figure. So the definition of that in the hood where we come from is this ever changing because people step up to the plate. I don't look at the traditional family sometimes being my family. I look at dude that had my back when I was 12 years old, 13 years old, and we did what we had to do to survive.
So just to kind of wrap it up, can you kind of speak on what projects you're working on now or you've been working on?
We're finishing up this film, Rap Dreams, which is about the Bay Area underground rap scene that features Mr. Fab and some other artists. We got this film, The Black Rock, which is about the African-Americans who served time on Alcatraz. So I've just been trying to stay, you know, involved in the media and stay networking with other communities and giving a lot of advice and just consultation to other upcoming media makers and that kind of stuff there.
Well, that's great. You know, we're going to be looking out for you.
Definitely.
And, maybe you can help me out, too, because, you know, I'm trying to become a superstar.
For sure. For sure. That's what it's about. It's been nice talking to y'all. It's all love.
Yeah, for sure. You have a good night.
All right, you too.
All right. Peace.
Bye. Peace.
What are we listening to, Marina?
Well, Gabe, we're listening to KRCB's Voice of Youth, The Hood Show.
We're going into the second half to the end of our Hood Show. If you're just tuning in, that was director Kevin Epps we just said goodbye to.
I noticed that he said, it's not like there's no family in the hood. There's just different family. There's different definitions for words like family or friends.
Yeah, he's from there, so it's not going to be a bad place for him. It's more like home. This is a second definition of hood, one that you would more get from someone on the inside.
The tension between these two definitions, the one that someone from outside gives and the one that someone from inside gives, is something you can hear in our next stories, coming at us from 2,000 miles to the east.
We've gone to the Third Coast Conference a few times, and we've been able to meet up with the amazing kids from Curry Youth Radio, a class at Curry High School on Chicago's southwest side.
These two short stories are from two students in the Curry Youth Radio class. The first is by David Diaz, and the second is by Keith Shine.
Get ready to travel to hoods you've never even heard of. Hit it.
I walk with only one thing on my mind, Stephanie, my girlfriend Stephanie. I forge down 51st Street following the tall green street lights. As I pass Los Amigos, the smell of tacos and tortillas make my nostrils flare. The Chicago wind blows as I watch men down the block stagger in and out of the Chula Vista Lounge that is set between two white apartment buildings. Cheap beer and tequila stink up the air, and Los Tigres del Norte sing and pluck their guitars. There's a man with his work boots on, ripped jeans, with a black stain on his left thigh. He wears a dirty white tee. He wipes what seems to be vomit from his chapped mouth. I exchange looks with this tired working man, only wondering what hardships he's been through today. I approach to her house, alone, except for old newspapers and floating Cheeto bags. I turn into the shadowed corridor between the two tall apartment buildings. I toss a small jagged rock to her taped up window. Stephanie greets me with a smile.
Welcome to the battlefield. The miniature outdoor arena is crammed with electrifying fans, raving for a good game. These games are so packed, you can't even see who scored, even if you're standing on your tippy toes. All Chicago hoods have one thing in common, and that's a bad image. Not saying that it's all good, but man, you won't get robbed if you take one step in the hood. I mean, yeah, there's thugs, crackheads, and pimps around, but there's a lot of love, too. Example, the Ickes annual basketball tournament played every summer in the famous Ocean Blue Adidas court on 22nd and State. This tournament is not just for the hood. Famous people come through, too, like NBA players Jamal Crawford or Eddie Curry, and musicians like R. Kelly and GLC. The players from my hood are no bombs either. There's players who so fast, it's like a cop blowing past you, leaving your clothes swaying in the wind. Players whose dunks can rattle the arena, and players dribbling with 20 flashing arms. It's all love for them 4 hours you spend in the arena. I mean, all the problems of shooting, gangs, and not having any money doesn't even matter when you're there. The referee whistle claws at your ear as the ref makes a call against the player. Traveling, and at the same time, the audience complaining to the ref, waving their hands in disgust. Bad call, ref. Let them play. Monty announces the game. He's a lanky African-American with braids, and he always wearing white shell toe Adidas. He has hood quotables like, "He's a goofy." And somebody make a mistake. And if somebody comes in with leather boots on the hottest day of the summer, he'll say something like, "I bet her feet losing 10 pounds. And she'll keep talking about the girl until she leaves out. And now, it's playoffs, one game elimination style. As the seconds dwindle, the audience is clinched on every bucket scored, every call made, and every dribble up the court to execute a play, until the final buzzer is sounded. And win or lose, it's mad love shown from everyone, because we charge on the court to celebrate, and it's packed like a club with the capacity of 100 people, but about 1,000 people in there so you can barely move. And the funny thing is, we outside. And like I said, for them 4 hours a day, nothing else matter. Just the love of basketball and my hood.
I'm your host, Greg Shimada, joined by fellow host, LaKoya Simmons.
What's up?
And yes, you can congratulate yourself. You made a very wise and enlightened decision to be listening to Voice of Youth, coming to you from Santa Rosa.
Well, actually, the stories you just heard came from Chicago's South Side, from David Diaz and Keith Shine. And we've got a big treat for you, and for us too. We're about to get Keith Shine on the line to speak to us from his room at the Harold Ickes Homes.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
What up?
I'm LaKoya.
This is Greg.
I met y'all before, right? When y'all come to school?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were in that class?
Yeah, I was the light-skinned guy, the one that was doing all talking.
The ones that had all the answers, right?
Yeah,
I remember you now.
All right, so we just got through listening to your story, and off top, I want to ask you to introduce yourself, you know, your name and your age, what you like doing.
Well, I'm Keith Shine from Chicago, age 16, and I love music, sports, basketball, really. Learning
about what?
Learning about everything.
Can you tell us where you are right now? What are the sights, the sounds, and the smells?
A really plain room, really. Like, I ain't really got nothing spectacular, but I got grammar school pictures up here. A little Grim Reaper I won at Six Flags. TV bed.
So, can you tell us a little bit about your story? Like, how the idea came about? Like, was it hard to do?
Nah, it came straight to me, because The tournament had just passed, like, before school started. and that was still fresh in my mind. And then as soon as I got in the class, that was like one of our first stories. He said something about your neighborhood. So I'm like, what's better than basketball? And it's something I like doing.
Do you still go to basketball games?
Yeah, I love basketball. I go to all my school basketball games. Like, I was playing, but then I got a job.
Where'd you get a job at?
Popeye's.
Can you tell us about where you live? You know, have you lived there your whole life? What is it like living there?
I live in Harold Icky home. Said the project. For me, it's like, people say it's like really tough growing up in the projects, you know what I'm saying? But it's not like really tough because I grew up with most of everybody down here. You know, it's like love. I don't like living down here, but it's love.
And what don't you like about living down there?
I'd be shooting and stuff and murders and the fact that you're saying like you live in the project. That.
Yeah.
So what's your definition of the word hood?
Hood. Oh, man, hood. Hold on, let me try and think about that for a second. Some people say hood is the bad place, and some people say hood is your home. Okay, the place where the lower class at. That's what the hood is.
And what would you say is the lower class?
Not middle class, not upper class. Poor people. The people that's trying to make ends, check to check people. Check to paycheck people.
Okay, say there's like, there's the neighborhood, and then there's the hood, right? And I want to ask you, is there necessarily a difference? And if there is, what is it?
What's the difference between the realness, I guess? I don't know.
When you say the realness, what do you mean by that?
Like, people keep it real. Nobody sugarcoats nothing down in the project. Like, nobody, if somebody's mad, they going to tell you they mad. They ain't going to just, like, stay in the house or keep it to themselves or, I don't know, like, you just look at the people like, man, I don't want to be like this when I grow up, you know?
Yeah.
Do you think it's a compliment or an insult if people say that you're from the hood?
I take it as a compliment. I say it as a compliment because, you know, I've been brought up real, and I've seen real things, and, you know what I'm saying, certain things that might scare some people, it wouldn't affect me as much as other people. But you can also take it as a negative quality because people like you from the hood, so they expect you to be a certain way, I guess.
So would you say, like, the hood or where you grew up influenced you to become who you are?
You are a product of your environment. So that's why I guess I'm real. Because I can look at my environment and see, like, the truth. You know, like, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I don't know. I guess I'm real.
Every neighborhood, it seems like these days, they have gangs. So, like, what gangs are in your neighborhood?
The whole lore, everything on the low ends of Chicago is all GD. You know what I'm saying? And I can say that whole area is, like, all GD.
And what is GD?
Gangster Disciples.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Growth and Development, now they changed it, but Gangster Disciples. Because there's a lot of gangs, it's, you know, Latin Kings, GDs, BDs, Vice Lords, Stones, Two Sixes, any. A lot of games, but.
So why do you feel like those people want to be a part of something? What do you feel like they're trying to get from being with the gangs?
I don't know, cause I don't know. I'm not in the gang, so I don't really know what's their purpose. I guess they want to have a family or something, but I don't know.
When I went there to Chicago, I noticed that there was a lot of blue lights all over the city.
The police lights.
Yeah. And I didn't know what they were.
The blue lights is for the police to watch neighborhoods. That's just to watch the drug dealers. And they say if you can see the blue light, then they can see you. Like in Iggy's, we have blue lights, two blue lights, uh-huh. One on 24th and one on 23rd. Like, I feel that they should have it around the whole Chicago. You just can't pick out one neighborhood that's just making one area that's already bad look even worse.
So you feel like it's a negative thing to have the lights in your neighborhood?
It's positive because people will be more aware. Like, if they see the blue light, they won't do the crime. But if you go in the back of the building, ain't no blue lights back there. So So they still gonna do the crime, you know. You can't stop the crime. That's just for people that's outside of the projects to look, and they see them blue lights, and they know how to go in there.
So would you say that the crime has gone down in areas where the blue lights are?
No. Mm. Like, three people just got, like, killed last week. You know what I'm saying? That stuff ain't help. They went in the back of the building and murdered somebody. So yeah. That was, it was like three murders in a week. I ain't never heard of that before.
Mm. Wow.
So if you could choose to grow up or live anywhere else, where would it be?
Nowhere. Nowhere. I stay where I'm at. Because that build my character living there.
Yeah. So, is on any day, where could I find you in your hood?
You could find me on the basketball court.
Hmm.
Yeah. Going upstairs in my house, writing rhymes. I rap.
You do it big?
Do I do it big?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do it big. I'm nice on the MC Tip. Right up.
Any last shout outs or anything you want to give out?
I want to give a shout out to the whole Chicago, Kiri, the whole Icky Projects, Ox Quartz, Hilliard Homes, my whole family, and y'all for playing it.
Yeah, for sure.
No problem, man.
All right,
so thank you again. You have a good night.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right.
And we'll be talking to you soon.
Wow. Well, that was Keyshawn on the line. It's amazing how hard it is, even for someone who people might say lives in the hood, to define what it means. I think he nailed it when he said it's both a bad place and a home. And then he said it's a place where people are living paycheck to paycheck, which makes me think the question of what is a hood is really a question of how does poverty affect your life viewpoint.
And that was deep how he said living in the hood made him real, that he could see the reality of things. But what is being real? Like, is someone living in Fountain Grove, Santa Rosa's rich area of town, not living paycheck to paycheck, less real than someone living in South Park or Apple Valley? Two areas people would likely say are hoods.
Well, I think both of them are kind of not real, I guess, what people have their definitions of real.
Neither one of them are really real, you know, living wealthy or living, like, more in poverty, because, say, someone who's living more wealthier, they could say that the people that are living in poverty are not real because they're not being able to enjoy life, quote unquote, the way that it should be lived or the way that it should be enjoyed. So it's like they're not living real. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, the people who are living in poverty or whatever could say that the wealthier people are not real because they haven't gone through the experiences that they have gone through that make them say that they're real. Somebody who's lived in poverty, gone through all the things that a hood goes through, say for instance, like they've been in a fight, they've even seen a fight before, you know, like someone who lives in a wealthier area has never experienced that or nothing, they're not gonna be able to relate.
It's a totally different culture.
It's like they're not enjoying life.
Yeah.
So they're not really living.
But they are enjoying life, but just in a totally different way. Yeah.
I think that's what it's all about, just being able to relate to a person on certain levels. That's what makes them real to you, because if you can relate to a person on something, you're like, okay, well, we're kind of like the same.
Yeah,
you know,
they share life experiences.
Yeah, we're both real, you know. Yeah. But say, like, for a wealthier person, if they can relate to each other, then they both feel like they're real to each other, you know.
Yeah, I never really thought of that as like why we relate to each other, you know, like, because then you can understand that person is a human.
Well, it's about time to wrap things up.
We thought we'd let someone else have the last word for a change.
For a special show about Latino gang violence, Voice of Youth adapted a story from a book called Einstein's Dreams. This book is a set of chapters, each one like a dream that Einstein is having, a dream where time acts and works differently. In the book, the setting for all the dreams is in Switzerland, where Albert Einstein lived. But we decided to experiment. We changed the details so that the dreams take place right here in Santa Rosa, in a Latino neighborhood called Roseland, a place that qualifies as hood in all of our definitions. People call it a bad place. People call it home.
And beyond all the superficial judgments, beyond race, class, whether you have the perspective of being inside or outside, It's a place that creates a normal for many people. It makes a spectrum of their experience. If you live there your whole life, you would think it's normal to have signs in Spanish everywhere, taco trucks all around, men selling tamales and papaya out of coolers.
You think it's normal for young teenage boys to shave their heads, wear baggy pants, and the news of the neighborhood is when one of those kids kills another one, or every so often, that someone you know vanishes on the way to the store, taken away in the big white vans by the immigration authority.
This next piece, One Dream of Our Series, is like the last in our series of definitions. Remember a while back, I said that a hood is like an invisible place or an invisible quality to that place. I think this story gets at this quality, that the real hood is in your head, when where you've grown up, your experiences have shaped your sense of yourself and your future in a way that you can't think outside of.
So it seems that the definition of hood is not about being poor, it's about having a narrow view on things. A kid in Fountain Grove who has never seen any other way of life is just as much hood as a kid in Hunters Point who doesn't know any other life. That's just our last definition of the day, but there's probably an endless amount of definitions. Or maybe, as Keith Shine said, there's just one simple one. A hood is love, he said, just love. A love that won't let you go. So enjoy the story.
And we'll see you next week.
Peace out.
On the corner of West Avenue and Sebastopol Road, there's a small taqueria, and in the parking lot, a taco truck with a canopy and a string of bare bulbs and a big table set out with flowers. And from this table, you can see the whole of Roseland walking or driving by. People drift past on the way to Lola's just up the road to buy harina, meat, or mariscos. A group of kids from Shepherd Elementary follow their teachers in double-filed lines through the streets on a field trip to RUP. Fog flows in from the coast, car exhaust from the waiting traffic spouts out, the light turns green, and the trucks, lowriders, buses, and sedans speed past. If, for the moment, one ignores the sounds and smells of the city, a remarkable sight will be seen. 2 day laborers at the corner of Dutton and Sebastopol are trying to part, but cannot, as if they would never see each other again. They say goodbye, start to walk in opposite directions, then hurry back together and embrace. Nearby, a middle-aged woman sits on the metal seat of the bus stop, weeping quietly. She grips the metal with her yellow-stained hands, grips it so hard the blood rushes from her hands, and she stares in deep despair at the ground. Her loneliness has the permanence of a person who believes she will never see other people again. 2 young women with strollers walk down Sebastopol Road, arm in arm, laughing with such abandon that they could be thinking no thought of the future. In fact, this is a world without future. In this world, time is a line that ends at the present, both in reality and in the mind. In this world, no person can imagine the future. Imagining the future is no more possible than seeing colors beyond violet. The senses cannot conceive what may lie past the visible end of the spectrum. In a world without future, each parting of friends is a death. In a world without future, each loneliness is final. In a world without future, each laugh is the last laugh. In a world without future, beyond the present lies nothingness, and people cling to the present as if hanging from a cliff. A person who cannot imagine the future is a person who cannot imagine the results of his actions. Some are thus paralyzed into inaction. They lie in their beds all through the night, wide awake, but both afraid to sleep, and yet aware it is not light enough to wake. They drink agua fresca and look at photographs. Others leap out of bed in the morning, unconcerned that each action leads to nothingness. Unconcerned they cannot plan out their lives. They live moment to moment, and each moment is full. Still others swap the past for the future. They recount each memory, each action taken, each cause and effect, and are fascinated by how events have delivered them to this moment. The last moment of the world the end of the line that is time. Under that canopy, at the taco truck's table, lit up by its string of bare bulbs, a young boy, shaved head, hooded, hard stare, sits with his taco and horchata. He has been observing the street. He has seen the two laughing women with strollers, the middle-aged woman at the bus stop, still crying, the two day laborers who keep repeating goodbyes. As he sits, it begins to darken. He can only imagine the present. So as he sips his horchata and eats the taco, he marvels at how the end of the world is so dark. Then, rain. He marvels at how the world ends in rain. He sees the mother of his friend who just died, and they talk about how the family is moving back to Mexico. But he's not waiting for the rain to stop, because he's not waiting for anything. In a world without future, each moment is the end of the world. After 20 minutes, the storm passes, the rain stops, the sky brightens. The young man returns to the table, marvels that the world ends in sunlight.
This is a Voice of Youth Court Referred production staff.
We'd like to say
good night.
Thanks for listening.
Voice of Youth
would like to extend thanks
to the anonymous writers and readers of our hood essays.
Well, we can name Sean Allen, who read his own essay full of friendly exchanges between neighbors.
She stopped and gave me a hug, and I was like, ugh, you're gross.
You said that, Sean?
Well, I didn't say that. I just hugged her.
To our colleagues in Chicago,
David Diaz and Keith Shine,
for introducing us to some of their friends from the hoods. Chicago residents with razor wits.
And if somebody comes in with leather boots on the hottest day of the summer, he'll say something like, I bet her feet losing 10 pounds.
And to Kevin Epps,
for taking the risks.
Guns on you.
And taking on the responsibilities to pave the way for producers like us.
I gotta use this to inspire other people.
To editor Katie Stolman for not using this music in the show.
And to our fabulous listeners who have given mad props to Voice of Youth. Join this growing group of listeners writing in.
Email Tatiana_Harrison@krcb.org. That's Tatiana_Harrison@krcb.org.
Or call 707-584-2017. That is 707-584-2017.
And we take the bad with the good, you know. Any feedback is great.
Well, nothing bad about me, Lucas Reichneuth.
Or me, Gabe Moore. Yee!
Hoping to hear from you, this is
Voice of Youth.
Signing off.
Peace out.
Keep it real.
Close I ever been to commercials when I watch TV, and everybody know I rep these streets faithfully. Hey. Every time I do it for my hood, and every time I do it for your hood, and every time I do it for they hood. It's understood, I do it for the hood.
Greetings.
Salutations.
Assalamu alaikum. Oh, okay.